Welcome to Fembolden, episode 6. I'm Stephanie Graff.
And I'm Kirsten Pope.
So today, it was only a matter of time that we broached this topic. Today we are talking about dating and relationships.
Ooh!
Everyone's favorite topic.
Right.
Even if they say it's not.
1 month pre-Valentine's Day, we're just preparing everybody.
Yeah, everyone gets psyched out of your minds. We are less than a month away.
The countdown is on, beginning with this podcast.
Yeah. I mean, I wish we could call this podcast, like, instructions on how to find yourself a woke guy before Valentine's Day, but if I knew how to find a woke guy...
We probably wouldn't be here in the sound.
I probably wouldn't be as angsty. I'd be, like, hitting him up every day, every second.
Yeah, I think we need a huge disclaimer for this topic. Anybody who knows me, I mean, I can't speak for you, Steph, but anybody who knows me knows I'm, like, probably the least qualified person to be commenting on dating and relationships. I'm not professing to be any sort of expert on the topic. I mean, I consider myself a connoisseur of feminism.
That's the intersection we're trying to find here. Like, anyone can give their two cents on relationships, us included, but we're really talking today about... We're feminists. Like, what do feminists want from relationships? What are they looking for? What is the ideal relationship that we feel like brings maximum equality? Which a lot of these things we agree on and some we disagree. So mm-hmm. We'd love to hear your feedback on some of these.
Yeah. And again, another disclaimer. This one needs so many disclaimers for me. We're not going to, hopefully, not going to just be complaining about our own, especially my own dismal dating life, but rather trying to find solutions on how you can create more egalitarian relationship.
Yes.
So hopefully we'll avoid, I mean, there'll be some complaining, I mean, come on.
But
it's dating. But hopefully we'll take a more solution approach or a more discussion-based approach to kind of start a debate or start a discussion or even a thought process among yourself on this topic.
Exactly. I couldn't have said it better myself. How to find and how to cultivate egalitarian relationships. So our opener today, what else would it be? But a story of a date. This story, I hope that you will appreciate, but also I think it has a lot of aspects that you can kind of look into deeper and that we can kind of analyze.
Yeah, the undercurrents.
Yeah, what's the undercurrent of why this happened the way it did? So this happened to me maybe 2 weeks ago? Maybe
it's 2.5 weeks
ago. Quite recent.
The wound is fresh, so to speak.
Very fresh. And all of my friends heard about this date in about a 140-second-long Snapchat that I sent.
Probably the longest Snapchat I've ever received personally.
But just, and like, while I was on this date, I was just thinking, I'm like, oh, man, I can't wait to send that freaking snap. Because I knew I couldn't live tweet it because that's just a little too public. So to start out, this happened over Christmas break. So I was at my parents' house. So he calls me up in the middle of the afternoon and asks me to go on a date with him to his friend's wedding reception in Salt Lake. And he said, okay, let's leave between 6:30 and 7, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, okay, so I'm planning on that, go about my day. You know, about 6 o'clock rolls around, and I change out of my street clothes, as you will, into, like, went so far as to, like, steal my sister's super cute Zara dress out of her closet, like, risk my own life to look like a dime piece.
What a sacrifice.
It really was. So, like, hair's curled, looking fresh. I mean, it's, like, 6:30 now, so I just go out, sit on the couch, start watching a movie with my mom. Time is passing. And so around 7, I text him and say, hey, like, are we still on? Which, first point I want to highlight, I felt I shouldn't have had to do that. I shouldn't have had to reach out and be like, so, what's up? And he responds and he says, yes, I'm locked out of my apartment and my roommate won't be back for another 45 minutes. Okay, nice to know. So time goes on. He calls me at like 7:45 and he's like, okay, so I am coming to get you. I couldn't get into my apartment and so I'm not dressed for a wedding. So let's just go up to Salt Lake and let's go to Red Iguana, which is my favorite place. So I'm like,
okay. 10 out of 10 recommend.
Really would. And so I was like, okay, so changed back into my street clothes and I'm sitting there waiting. And so he texts me and he's like, oh, but by the way, my wallet is in my apartment. And so I'm going to need you to pay. Which Red Iguana, let's just say it's not exactly McDonald's. He comes and picks me up. So this is almost like an hour and a half after like our original time. Get in the car, and since he couldn't move his stuff into his new apartment, it's all on the passenger seat. We drive up to Salt Lake, and Red Iguana, it's like 8:30 at night, It's freezing cold, but there's such a long wait on a Friday night that it's like a 45-minute long wait in the cold. So luckily he has like the foresight, because I was like, I'm not doing that. We go and wait in the car. He calls them. We put in our order, pick it up in 10 minutes. I pay for it. We drive back down to Provo, where just as we're getting off the University Parkway exit, the car breaks down. And he apparently couldn't get a hold of anyone that he knew, so I have to call my family, have my little sister come bring our family gas can from the garage to put gas in his car. Which, by the way, like, my parents were livid about that. And I'm not quite sure, because my parents are usually pretty chill, but, like, they were just livid about this whole experience. So he hands my sister the empty gas can, and, like, she goes on her way. We go back to his apartment to watch a movie, but end up watching the Warriors game instead.
Which, I mean, for some people.
Some people they would like.
That's fine.
I am not even vaguely interested in sports, which this person knew. To wrap up this really great story that I feel like is a montage from a movie and not something that actually happened to me, why were these things unacceptable to me?
Well, the guacamole on the burrito in this situation is that, thanks, is that he, and when you were going to leave, you accidentally left your food at his place.
I cannot believe I forgot that part. Yeah.
So you probably blocked it out.
Red Iguana is my favorite place. So when we went back to his apartment, I had put my leftovers in his fridge. Like, I'd only taken, like, a few bites of my enchilada. Left them in his fridge and said, I'll come and get these. Like, don't let me forget these, which, of course, I did. So I call him the next day about it, and he's like, oh, I'm sorry, I had those for lunch. So
he ate,
and I have very strong feelings about food. So he ate his food and my food, both of which I paid for.
Don't be eating another person's burrito, like...
Yeah. Mm-mm. So, mm-mm. I guess, yeah, now let's dive in.
Okay.
Why was that annoying to me? Why was that behavior unacceptable?
I mean, another disclaimer, like, being that nobody's the expert at dating, and, I mean, if you were the expert at dating, you wouldn't be dating anybody, mm-hmm. or you wouldn't be dating anymore. You'd be moved on, graduated. Like, nobody's perfect. Even when you plan the perfect situation, your car will inevitably break down. I mean, that's just life. Mm-hmm. So we're not trying to disparage anybody who...
Yeah, not disparaging,
or discourage, like, anybody from, you know, going and executing dates because they think that...
Things go wrong.
Right,
go wrong.
Absolutely.
But the problem with this was the conglomeration of so much poor planning and so much poor execution. I'm like, I consider myself a fairly, like, I give people the benefit of the doubt.
Right.
But in this situation, I was like... So obviously I was frustrated.
Right. And again, like... We can't really judge, you know, what things were necessarily premeditated and what things just happened to create the perfect storm. Mm-hmm. But I think the underlying current, as we were trying to find out initially, is that there was a mismatch of expectations here. That yeah. you had, even from the get-go, expectations about being prompt, expectations about what you were doing. I mean, the wedding thing, and expectations about that he was going to, you know, pay or at least go halvesies. And you had all these expectations and he didn't meet any of them, which ended up resulting in a disastrous experience for you. And I'm sure he was feeling the same or somewhat same. And, of course, the expectation about eating your own food is kind of a big one, too.
Yeah. And so, exactly. Like, it was just, like, everything in life, happiness is the delta between expectations and reality. And you're only unhappy when your expectations and your reality, when there's a disconnect there. Mm-hmm. And so that's really in analyzing this that night.
Right.
That's what I came to, exactly what you said. It was just that my expectations didn't meet my reality. But getting down into, like, some of the topics that apply to all of us and that we actually really want to hit on today, were my expectations incorrect? Or was the problem just that our expectations didn't match up? Like, are we willing to make a judgment call on some of these things and say, like, it was objectively wrong, some of the stuff he did, or just it was wrong in the fact that it wasn't what I wanted?
Yeah, I would say both. I would say that starting with, I think the expectation of paying, like, who's going to pay and if he had the means to pay, because obviously there's some situation with getting his wallet or whatever, the expectation wasn't exactly communicated in the best way.
Mm-hmm. And that's a dating construct. Like,
right.
I believe that because I've been socialized to think that in dating, guys will pay for you. Whereas some of the other things, it was just a human decency construct. Like,
right.
things that if even, you know, a girl did that to me outside of, like, a dating situation would be frustrating.
Yeah, like being prompt.
Being prompt.
And just, like, letting you know what was going on. So, yeah, dating, I mean, even building a relationship is all about meeting expectations with each other.
Mm-hmm.
That my priorities line up with your priorities and we're going to move forward. And the point where your priorities diverge too much is when relationships break down and you ultimately break up.
And just touching on the idea of chivalry, because I feel like that's also applicable to this story and to, which I already know coming into this, you and me have different ideas.
We definitely do.
About chivalry. So how do you feel about that concept generally?
I personally am not a fan. I get this will just be the episode of disclaimers for me, I guess. I'm not saying that service to another person is bad. I would never say that. Like being kind to somebody, that should be your number one goal. Doing things that are kind, doing things that are respectful, respecting another person. I have a friend who's from the Deep South, and I assume that she would have very different feelings than me on this. That Southern hospitality of treating other people with respect, treating, you know, women with respect specifically is very good. And I definitely think that, you know, being kind is a baseline mm-hmm. for moral activity. But where I think chivalry goes wrong is that there's this underlying reason or agenda for it that is sexist. That I'm doing something nice for you because you're a woman and because I'm a man, not because we're both humans sharing in the human experience.
Mm-hmm. Whereas, I mean, I disagree. And a lot of that could just be, like, how and where I was raised and how I was socialized, but
I mean, we were raised, like, 45 minutes away from each other, so
exactly. But, I mean, like, obviously, like, it's just far more ingrained in me.
Even in Utah, the further south you get, the more chivalrous it becomes.
Southern Utah County hospitality.
Oh, gosh.
But, yeah, like, I like it when guys open my car door on dates and when they open the door for me. Like, I like that because I see it as respectful. But here is the caveat I'll give for that. I have a lot of great, really great guy friends who, even though we're totally platonic, they do things that would be considered quote-unquote chivalrous, like when we're out in mm-hmm. public. Like, one of my really best guy friends, when we were living in the same apartment complex, there's this great burrito place down the street, and we would oftentimes, like, when the weather was warm, we'd just, like, walk down the street and, you know, get a burrito. And even though, like, he wasn't interested in dating me, I wasn't interested in dating him, and it was just so platonic, he would always, even if I was walking on the street side, he would stop, move me to the inside of the sidewalk, and he would walk on the outside of the sidewalk. Like, that's learned chivalry. That's not something that's, like, supernatural for
yeah.
a lot of guys to do. I appreciated that more because I think, for me, the only place where I feel like chivalry can go wrong is that, like, I'm being chivalrous because I'm trying to impress you. Not because mm-hmm. I'm necessarily, like, I'm trying to show respect for all women, but I'm trying to, like, win you over.
I despise that mm-hmm. very mm-hmm. much so. I just feel like that's manipulative.
Yeah, and, like, very subconsciously so. And I think a lot of guys, that's just how they're raised, is their parents teach them, you know, you go on your first date, you open the door for her,
right.
without really teaching the why. The why is that we respect and we value women, which if that holds true, then that should be something you do for all women.
Yeah, exactly. What I would say to do instead of this, mm-hmm. you know, male to female chivalry is a universal respect, universal yeah. acts of respect. I don't think I should have this expectation as a woman that he has to open the door for me or he doesn't respect me, or that I'm, you know, on a first date, I'm judging all these things that he does as signs of his respect for me, which I think is just, you know, they're just arbitrary at that point. But, like, I feel in my perfect gender equality world that I would be just as likely to open the door for a man or to stand on the outside of the sidewalk for a man, and he would be just as likely to do the same. Like, there's this equal likelihood of respectful acts. When there's this gender binary, you know, infused with that, I just feel like it's, I personally, and again, I know not everybody feels this way, but I personally feel subordinated mm. to whoever I'm with, whatever male I may be with at the time.
Yeah. And I mean, I don't agree, but I can definitely see where you're coming from. But I would
not saying that, like, sorry, not yeah. saying that, like, if I'm on a first date and a guy, like, gets out of the car and opens the door for me, that I'm going to, like, go on some feminist rant or whatever, or, you know, mm-hmm. be super offended. Like, I'm absolutely not saying that that's going to be my reaction at all. I just personally feel that, you know, gender binary agenda is just outdated.
And, like, I would love to see that just general, like, we respect all humans equally. And everyone's raised that, you know, no matter someone's gender or race or, you know, you show the same respect for them. But I probably will never get off board on the chivalry thing.
I mean, bottom line, I feel it should be all about intention rather than result.
Yeah, which I'd agree with. It's less I'm doing this for something and more because, like, I generally
Yeah, not even that I'm doing it for something. It's that I'm doing it because I'm a man and because you're a woman. That, to me, is sexist.
Yeah. Which, I mean, like, as far as, like, egalitarian relationships go, which really is kind of the core of this podcast, I think there's a lot of, interesting things to investigate there, especially going back to the opening story. Like, when I go on a date, I don't take my wallet with me. Like, I assume if a man's asked me to do something that, like, he'll pay. And granted, like, yeah, I was socialized that way, and I don't think it's necessarily incorrect. But if we are saying that we're looking for egalitarian relationships, where does that tip the scale as far as paying for things, driving, initiating and planning dates, general communication, who determines level of commitment?
Yeah, I mean, again, I would say it should be completely egalitarian. And as far as the paying thing, I mean, I take the stance of if you plan it, if you initiate it, you should be responsible for that. And especially as you get further down the line and as you're moving from just the date thing to more of a relationship, totally share that responsibility because it's, and I think men would agree that it's a little unfair to place this financial burden on them when I'm just as capable of paying. Again, I feel like that's outdated, that's back to, you know, 17th, 18th century where I'm this frail woman who's, you know, I just crochet by day and court at night.
Like, okay, I do crochet by day, so don't hate.
I'm not saying that crocheting is not a valid art form. I'm just saying
kidding.
That you are also receiving an income for things that don't involve crocheting.
It's true. Maybe I'll change that and start an Etsy shop. But
feel free. I mean, follow your dreams.
And, like, I agree with you. I think, though, it could vary based on a situational basis. I was reading an article about this in Glamour magazine, to which I have a subscription,
and I would very reputable recommend. Source.
It is very reputable. They are very feminist.
I'm sure they are.
Actually, side note, Glamour magazine is where President Barack Obama published his very famous article on feminism, which if everyone hasn't read, I would 10 out of 10 recommend. So I was reading this article in Glamour that was talking about paying, and specifically about in committed relationships when the woman makes substantially more than the man and where the expectation kind of falls
right there.
Because I'm very on board with you that especially, like, when you're done going on, like, first dates and you've decided to commit to someone, that things do become a lot more egalitarian. But, I mean, case in point, last year I dated a guy for the bulk of last year that was graduated, had a really great job. Like, he was making six figures. And I had a student job working 20 hours a week at, like, maybe $9.50 or $10 an hour.
Pulling those three figures.
Yeah. Three figures, if I'm lucky. And so in that situation, I stepped down from the egalitarian thing. And maybe I shouldn't have stepped down from the principle, but just, like, from a completely economic and logical standpoint, it was...
Yeah, I mean, you could proportionally...
Yeah, it was ridiculous for me to assume that we would, you know, split things 50-50 or, like, half the time I'd pay for it. Because it, you know, it just... Mm-hmm. And it wasn't a problem. Like, it wasn't a financial burden for him like it would have been for me. And so I feel like there are exceptions to that. I guess what I'm trying to say is, like, yes, I'm all about egalitarianism, if that's even a word. But, you know, just...
Equality.
Yeah. Based on a situation-by-situation basis.
Right. And I think the determining factor or the catalyst to creating those relationships is communication. And communication eliminates false expectations or unmet expectations because in your date that you talked about earlier, I don't know if you have talked about that or whatever. Or they're just... I feel like the resolution to that would be to communicate, hey, you know, I was expecting you to pay for this and it's totally fine that I took care of that, but maybe we could, like, you know, figure this out beforehand, you know.
Yeah.
And that eliminates the friction that comes from money because money is a very motivating and sometimes depressing factor for people to have to deal with. And to eliminate that in what should be a joyous and fulfilling relationship is the ideal.
It is vulnerable, though.
It is very vulnerable. But, I mean, in order to assume, as Beyonce says in Flawless, to assume the economic equality of women to men, we need to take the steps where we can, and this is a place where we have full control over it, to assume that economic equality. Mm-hmm. And this isn't like the pay gap or the wage gap where we have less control, but we have full control over this. And yeah, it's vulnerable, and it's outside the norm, which I think is what makes it most vulnerable. But I'm sure, or at least I hope, that the man on the other side of this would be very welcoming to sharing that burden.
Yeah, if he is, as we said before, woke.
Woke, which is, you know, what we're looking for.
Which is always what we're looking for, to get someone freaking awoken.
If you're out there.
If you're out there, this is our siren call.
Hear our feminist
hear
cries.
Our cries. Come find us. So I guess just carrying that, what we're talking about, just on to kind of a me versus we debate.
Mm. And this is where we get into more of a committed relationship, not, you know, moving from the dating phase to more of the relationship phase.
We were talking about this. To what extent do personal priorities, or what extent should personal priorities take precedent over the priorities of the relationship?
And a relevant example of this is the recent movie La La Land. Again, 10 out of 10 recommend. Oh, my gosh.
10 out of 10.
I mean, oh, it's so good. And so I'll give a brief summary, hopefully avoiding spoilers. I mean, the gist is that it follows two aspiring artists, Mia and Sebastian. They end up getting into a relationship. And they come to this crossroads where Mia, I guess I'm spoiling it now, whatever. Where Mia is essentially kind of choosing between following her career, and Sebastian at the same time. They're both choosing, are we going to pursue our relationship, or am I going to follow my dream, quote unquote, and pursue my career? So they come at this crossroads of relationship versus career. And we're hoping on doing a full episode about that whole dynamic. But what we wanted to get into today is what were their responsibilities? Like, do you have the just as equal a responsibility to follow your personal priorities? In this case, it was their careers. Or does the responsibility of you together as a whole take precedent, and which tips the scale in that decision-making process?
Because I've definitely erred on both ends of the spectrum. When I was in a super serious relationship about 2 years ago with Dirk, I got the worst. I'm a good student. I got like a 3.2 GPA that semester, and it was like, well, like, am I going to study really hard for my finance test? Or, like, am I going to go to this event with Dirk? And at that point in my life, I'm like, well, Dirk is, like, my number one priority, and, like, we're probably going to get married, so I feel like this is where I'm going to funnel my time. Mm-hmm. But, okay, that relationship didn't work out.
Yeah, and so on the other side of supporting your partner is kind of the feeling of regret when it doesn't pan out, and you're like, there are things that I could have
done.
That
I could have done.
Or wanted to do that I didn't because I was in this relationship.
Yeah. Socially, academically, just in every function of my life, I felt like, wow, like, I wasn't devoting as much time to those, which every time you get in a relationship is going to happen, and
right.
It's not necessarily bad.
And another disclaimer, because I have so many, we're not talking so much about a marriage relationship, especially from an LDS perspective. I personally feel that especially your family as a whole, especially if you have children, always takes precedence.
Over the me. But in a committed dating relationship,
right,
though.
Yeah.
And so, like, how much
where you haven't committed your life to the other person.
No, but, like, you're considering if you want to and
right.
if you might. How much are you giving a fair shot, and how much are you going to say sometimes, you know what, like, I actually want to do this for me.
Right.
And
what I loved about La La Land is that I felt like that was never resolved, that it kind of gave these two trajectories, but I felt that both had value in different areas, that both had worth for each person in different ways. And it's just, and I think that's what agonizes me so much about it, is that there's no clear-cut answer. And I feel like they would be happy in either situation, but it's how do you make that difficult decision, whether it's a small thing
or a large thing,
moving across the world.
Because I feel like, especially in college, this is so prevalent. Like, I've had friends who, they start dating a guy. Well, I mean, I'll give an example of my real-world roommate. Last semester, we both sold our contracts because she was planning on moving back home to California, you know, to work for her company has a satellite office out there. So move home to the Bay Area and work in California, and she just really wanted to get out of Utah. And but then she started dating a guy. They'd only been dating for about a month and a half, and she had to make a decision. Am I going to move or am I going to stay?
Mm-hmm.
And she made the decision, you know, like, yes, I really, really want to get out, but I feel like I have an obligation to give this a try. So she signs a contract somewhere. She tells her boss she's staying. And, I mean, less than a week later, they break up. And, I mean, firsthand, she regretted that. But I've had friends, I mean, who have done the opposite, where they've been dating someone and they get an internship or a job or a study abroad opportunity. Mm-hmm. And they say, you know, I'm going to leave for a time because this is something I want to do for me. And, you know, based on the situation, it could work out or it could not. But I really don't think there's a right answer to it.
No. And from an LDS perspective, I think, considering involving prayer in that decision is something vulnerable for me to say, but also very valid as a source. But I was talking to my other friend, Stephanie, about this after we watched it together. And I loved what she said, which was basically whatever you think will bring you the most happiness in the moment, that's what you should do. And I think that's really difficult to live by because we have this, as humans or as whatever, we have this feeling of what if or what could have been. But I think a feminist reaction to that would be to do what makes you happy. And if what makes you happy is to follow your career or follow some personal pursuit, you should not feel guilty about that. You should not, you know, judge yourself for doing that. Hopefully.
Yeah.
Because easier said than done.
And I think even, you know, if it does work out, you never want to be left being resentful, which...
Yeah, that's a good point. Or hold the other person, hold them up and say, you know, you denied me this.
I did this for
you. I sacrificed for you. That's damaging.
Really damaging. And so, like, it's not selfish to really do what makes you the most happy, because I think it is so beneficial in relationships, because that's how that helps you to be able to come in really emotionally healthy into that relationship, that you're really not harboring, saying, like, you owe me anything, or I did this
right.
for you, or... But that we are two people, again, yeah. The end of La La Land.
Like a relationship of debts is not
no.
okay.
Which is so easy to stumble into. But, you know, saying, like, we are both healthy individuals who are doing the best we can to achieve our dreams, but we're just doing that together. And I think, you know, in my personal opinion, that is the ideal relationship.
Absolutely. Because I think as soon as you, whether you communicate this or not, sacrifice something that's really personal to you in for the sake of the relationship and hold the other person accountable for that is when you're eliminating consent on the other person's part because they didn't necessarily tell you to do that. Mm-hmm. Kind of this implicit decision making for them, if that's making any sense. I don't know if it is.
It's making sense.
Good. I think the subject we wanted to land on at the end and hopefully bring some resolution and some hope and inspiration to people who may be in the depths of dating or lack thereof is to kind of talk about what makes dating so awful and how we can
make it less awful.
Yes, exactly.
Because we love the burden. Ending on a positive note.
Right.
We really, in our opinion, we really narrowed it down to there are three reasons why people hate dating.
Right.
And why, especially as you get older, dating just gets worse and worse. Mm-hmm. It's a lack of communication, unwillingness to be vulnerable, and feeling like you're in this unending vetting process, which I feel like the older I get, just the more... I mean, because as I become more myself, it just gets more and more just, like, tedious.
Yeah,
to feel
less
like,
tolerable.
Yeah, to feel like I'm being vetted or to, like, vet another person.
So, lack of communication. I feel like if you talked to, or, like, have received relationship advice from any older person, they will tell you that the secret is communication, which I think is totally valid, being a communication disorders major.
And I'm a communications major, although caveat, I don't consider myself a very good communicator.
Neither do I, but I know I know how it's disordered and...
I am a communication disorder.
Just a walking communication disorder. We touched on this earlier, but communication resolves that feeling of unmet expectations. So many times people, though I haven't been in many relationships myself, I've given out plenty of relationship advice over the years as I'm just always in that position. And so many times somebody's sitting there waiting for something to happen to them or analyzing something that has happened to them, and there's this barrier between them and the other person. It's like, I don't want to give you, you know, the battle the battle plans for my side, just as you aren't going to give me the battle plans for your side, and we're just going to kind of see if we can meet up somewhere. And that, mm-hmm. that to me is just a recipe for disaster. When you're expecting something from somebody without telling them what you're expecting. Like, yeah. how is that supposed to work?
And, like, going back to the opening story, so some of that, not a lot of it, granted, some of my disappointment, like, lies in myself, or should lie in myself, because I didn't communicate, and again, I'm a terrible communicator. Like, we were driving up to Salt Lake, and he was like, is anything, and I was trying my best not to be passive-aggressive. He was like, is anything wrong? And I was like, nope, because, like, I hate conflict. I run from conflict like anything else, but...
But communication is not conflict.
It's not conflict, and I like, recognize that doesn't strengthen a relationship.
Right.
Hashing things out and bringing everything to the forefront, that would have strengthened the relationship rather than just burying it underneath, because, spoiler alert, I'm resentful. Yeah.
But I think that bleeds into the next one, which is the unwillingness to be vulnerable. Oh. Because communication inherently requires vulnerability.
Exactly. I think these are two sides of the same coin.
Right. Very intertwined.
Being vulnerable is, although, yes, I've listened to and read Brené Brown, yes, I understand that I need to be vulnerable, and that's the only...
10 out of 10 recommend her. Seriously. TED Talk.
If you haven't. But that's the only way to have really, really successful relationships and to be really successful yourself.
And I was once in a situation where I had not communicated at all, and I had very unmet expectations and very unmet beliefs about where I stood with somebody. And I kind of just one night channeled, we bought a Zoom, Matt Damon.
Such a good movie.
Channeled Matt Damon and like 30 seconds of insane courage and like, you know, asked the elephant in the room question. And that was the most vulnerable thing of my life. And I got completely rejected and it crushed me. Now, having stood back from that situation, I'm glad that I did that, although it was horrible and vulnerable. But I'm glad that I did that because it allowed me to move on. It allowed me to make progress and it allowed us to open the doors of communication where they were previously shut.
And I mean, that is vulnerability. Usually, I think you said it perfectly. It's 30 seconds of insane courage, and you're far more likely to get shut down than if you're not vulnerable. And that's what makes it scary, and that's why it's hard for a lot of people, me included, to be vulnerable, is you're far more likely to get rejected, shut down, than if you just push everything to the bottom, suppress everything. But you're far more likely to be healthy and happy with events in your life because everything is very much on the surface.
Mm-hmm. Authentic, as Brené says.
Authentic. And
authenticity leads into the next one.
Yes.
So much flow happening.
Oh, no. Judgment, I mean, it has negative connotations. I think what we're really talking about is, I mean, dating is a vetting process. Dating, yeah, as much as we hate to admit it, like, first dates are a lot like you're on an interview and you're trying to see if you want the job and if they want to hire you and if it's a good fit. And I hate interviewing. And the vetting process is hard. And I feel like dating isn't a true vetting process. Again, likening it to an interview. Like, if I have an interview with a company that I really want to work for, and I get into the interview, and they tell me, like, you know, you're going to be working, like, 80 hours a week. We can't pay you very much, blah, blah, blah. But I am just set on working for this company. I'll put up with that. Whereas some other company where I'm like, yeah, this is the good fit, and I could work here, I would not put up, you know, being treated that way. And I think that's where the problem is with dating, is it's such a flawed system. But like, if you're very into someone, you'll put up with like, oh, well, they do this. I can overlook it.
But to put in the feminist plug here, though, I strongly believe you shouldn't go into this job interview with some construct of who, of what they're expecting you to be or who you feel like you should be. Mm-hmm. Because I've been on a first date before where I felt like I had to, internally, I don't think this was an external pressure, but where I felt like I had to, you know, fit this mold, or that I had to transform myself into somebody that they would like. And that was miserable. And I'm sure I wasn't impressive at all because I failed at being somebody that I wasn't.
Yeah, because you're not being, going back to the last one, authentic.
Right. And I think trying to be a feminist is defying the idea that there are norms.
And I mean, everyone has their own personal norms. And I think I would agree there shouldn't be norms.
And that goes male or female.
Yeah. And there shouldn't be norms as to, like, who's a woman everyone should want to date. But everyone has their own personal norms about what they want. I mean, maybe 2 months ago or something, I had a guy, after we had gone out, really liked him, blah, blah, blah. He told his best friend, who I'm also very good friends with, that he really liked me, but that he couldn't date me because I was, quote, unquote, too mainstream.
Not hipster enough.
Not hipster enough.
Whatever.
And so
that means,
it wasn't anything about me personally, but his personal norms, you know, the fact that I sometimes listen to Kesha, that's a deal breaker, you know?
And you shouldn't feel bad or change that.
Exactly.
I mean, unless it's like something morally wrong.
But like, he has a right to that. And as frustrating as it is for me to actually admit that, he has a right to have his own
yes
norms.
Yes. And as soon as you respect somebody else having that gives you...
You give yourself permission to have your own.
Yes, exactly. You give yourself permission to have your own preferences.
Yeah, maybe preferences, norms, preferences, things you're looking for. And because dating, it's more like a puzzle. Like you're trying to find a good fit.
Yeah.
And I think being authentic is how you find that fit.
Yeah, and often you come into this struggle where like, oh my gosh, like they're judging me for not being a hipster. Like what the heck?
Oh, trust me, I had that.
Yeah, like, oh my,
really
and you get really mad, but ultimately you should resolve that and let them be that way so that you can be that way with other people.
Yeah, because if that really is such a priority to him, which obviously it was, we would not be a fit. No, I'm
right,
not going to pretend I like slacklining, so you'll date me. No, like,
that's
it just, it's not going to work.
Yeah.
In the end, like, it is good for people to have norms, but it can feel like it is a vetting process and it can feel like judgment. But I feel like that's one part of dating that you just have to bite the bullet and say it's not going to be a perfect fit every time. Mm-hmm. And they have a right to have things that they're looking for.
Yeah. And as a feminist, as soon as you give them that right, you have the right to be your feminist, unboxed self who believes in egalitarian relationships.
Exactly. So that was our guide.
Did we resolve your life? No. Did we resolve our lives? No.
No.
But hopefully we sparked some discussion.
Yeah. And so I'm constantly wondering about how to date. What's the best and healthiest and most forward-thinking way to date? And so I feel like we touched on a lot of topics that everyone in this culture has to encounter.
And this is a conversation we can definitely continue. But we do want to give you a preview of coming attractions on Fembolden, as we did not do that last time. We don't know exactly what's going to be up next, but some topics we're working on include kind of a men's world episode looking at male stereotypes and male pressures, and also the career versus mommy, like which life plan is right for you, or is there a right life plan? Probably not. We'll be discussing that.
Yeah, and we're going to bring on some great guests for both of those because we are not the experts on either of those topics. So stay tuned. This is Fembolden.